be gone by now, taken over. There wouldn't be any Disney.
Pixar hasn't been taken over, Roy said, pointing out that it was small, but so successful creatively that its high stock price made a takeover prohibitively expensive. They're Disney people, you know. The comparison to Pixar also annoyed Eisner. What else don't you agree with?
Andy Mooney, Roy replied, referring to the head of consumer products who had put Tinkerbell on T-shirts.
Why?
Roy felt the discussion was getting nowhere, so he saw no point in answering. But he took advantage of the occasion to remind Eisner of his oft-repeated promise that if he lost Roy's support, he'd resign.
I never said that, Eisner replied, leaving Roy speechless.
Eisner stressed once more to company confidants that he wanted Roy monitored more closely than ever, and that he wanted every conversation reported to him. One day Eisner gestured toward several thick binders on his desk and said that he had collected every email Roy had sent and received. Some animators blanched at the thought, wondering how discreet they had been. They certainly hadn't expected their emails to wind up on Eisner's desk. As instructed, Thomas Schumacher had dutifully reported his conversations with Roy to Eisner, but the tensions between the two were growing intolerable. Schumacher was caught squarely in the middle of the intensifying feud. That fall, Eisner demanded that Roy be excluded from animation meetings, even that the locks be changed on his office, and that he be barred from the lot. Schumacher considered Roy a friend. Roy and Patty had hosted Schumacher and his partner Matthew White at their castle in Ireland. Roy had shepherded Schumacher's career, backed his decisions, and championed animation. So Schumacher refused. Michael, I cannot betray Roy, and I won't do that. On Eisner's orders, he did warn Roy to stay away from animation meetings, but Roy ignored him. Just as Schumacher reported Roy's conversations to Eisner, he reported Eisner's remarks to Roy, including Eisner's demand that Roy be barred from animation meetings and from the studio lot. Despite these distractions, Schumacher tried to concentrate that fall on the finishing touches to Treasure Planet, the much-anticipated and expensive animated feature from Clements and Musker. Treasure Planet cost $130 million, $10 million under budget. It opened on November 17th, the key pre-Thanksgiving kickoff to the holiday season. Warner Brothers' Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets had already opened to critical acclaim and huge box office revenues. Most reviewers hailed Treasure Planet's arresting visual imagery. A treasure for the eyes was the Chicago Tribune's verdict, but overall, critics wallowed in an anti-Disney backlash. A.O. Scott in the New York Times was especially devastating. Calling Treasure Planet brainless and mechanical, he added that the movie is less an act of homage than a clumsy and cynical bit of piracy designed to steal time and money from schoolchildren and their harried, pottered-out parents during this long holiday weekend. The adventures that youngsters act out on the French fry-littered seats of the family minivan will surely be more exciting and imaginative than the film itself. Treasure Planet director Ron Clements was skiing with his family.